regeneration is not yet another management philosophy or another thing to implement and hire consultants. For me, a regenerative approach is tapping into so much of the good that we already have. I never work as a consultant for companies where I come in and tell them what to do. What I prefer to do is to work with keystone species in the organizations, people that have an impact, and help to train them, help to train a corpse of people from within that can hold this. So it's not something top-down that gets implemented, because there's so much fatigue around new management strategies. We need to hold space for the goodness, for the regenerative capacities that are already there. And as you say, I mean, the regenerative field borrows wisdom from indigenous wisdom, theory U, integral frameworks, evolutionary frameworks, the teal framework, etc. We can build on all of that, and we can assess in the company, where are they doing great things already? Mindfulness, you were mentioning as an example. For me, mindfulness is just not going to cut it alone. There are many of these things that are not going to cut it alone. So therefore, we need to see them as kind of helpful enablers of starting to shift the whole organization in a healthy regenerative direction.
Und das war Laura Storm, die Stimme für Regenerative Economy und eine weltweite Bewegung, die sich Regenerators nennt. Sie lässt uns an ihrer ganz persönlichen Reise teilhaben und stellt sich dabei der Frage, was wäre eigentlich möglich, wenn ein Unternehmen im Amazonas-Dschungel mehr über modernes Wirtschaften und Management lernen kann, als in jedem Business-Seminar. Es geht darum, wie wir starre oder sogar lebensfremde Organisationen und Geschäftsmodelle in lebendige Organismen verwandeln. Und damit ein herzliches Willkommen zu der ersten englischsprachigen Folge von Beyond KPI, der Podcast für Menschen, die es spannend finden, mehr darüber zu erfahren, was das Magische des Lebens ausmacht und das schon Faszinierende nicht zu Verstehende. Begrüßt mit mir Stefan Klung, unseren Moderator und Gründer. Und schön, dass du wieder eingeschaltet hast. Los geht's.
Hello and welcome to Beyond KPI. And as you might have heard it in the intro, yes, this is an episode in English today. And yes, you are right. It's almost Beyond KPI. And you know what? It's the very first one. So I'm honored and excited all at the same time. And today we are diving into a topic that is on the one hand very close to my heart, and on the other hand I'm truly convinced that it is a crucial different perspective of business and business models. And today it's about regenerative leadership, and believe it or not, I'm not tackling this topic today just by myself. No, I have a very special guest joining me today. And so let me introduce you to someone who is a kind of a big deal for myself, and yeah, probably one of the faces, global ambassador, international top speaker, and for me, real superstar and a real source of inspiration for a movement that I'm fortunate being part of, along with so many incredible other people. Yeah, I can say across the planet. And before we gonna start, I just want to share with you some facts and figures. Laura Storm is in the house, yeah, and Laura Storm is an international keynote speaker and author of the book Regenerative Leadership, advisor and real expert on the topic of sustainability and regenerative leadership. And she spent probably her entire life and career advising global leaders on this specific topic, sustainability and building impact and purpose-driven organizations and movements. And yeah, from my perspective, I think that when we talk about this topic, regenerative leadership, she's probably the person that you want to hear from. So without any further ado, and long story short, A really warm welcome to Laura Storm. Laura, it's amazing to have you here.
Thank you so much, Stefan. What a wonderful introduction. It's an honor to be here and looking forward to exploring ideas and perspectives together.
Yeah, Laura, before we're going to start and jump into our conversation, I'd like to share with you and introduce you to the idea and intention of Beyond KPI and give you some more details. Because we don't know each other on a personal level, you should know that I am really fascinated by putting things out of their conventional context. And that's why Beyond KPI for me is more a metaphor. It's an invitation to take a different perspective on things. And this different perspective for me is based and sourced by experiences and observations, probably over the last 25, 30 years, being in totally different areas of life and businesses. And what brought me to this different perspective is an observation that I'm truly convinced that we as human being have a very inner kind of a tension and friction and need to understand everything, to analyze everything on the micro level. And what I'm really fascinated by is that having this inner drive, having this inner tension to measure everything and try to understand everything and try to, as already said, analyze everything. There is, let's take the business area. There is, beside this very crucial perspective, for example, on business model, there is obviously an area, a field that we are not able to understand, that we cannot measure. And I would describe it as a kind of a frequency, kind of a field, an area. It could be an energy or it could be an intelligence. Probably we can define it as an evolutionary intelligence of life. And that's why I'm trying to talk to people exactly about this kind of field of not knowing. And in conjunction with this metaphor, I truly believe that that's, we can describe it as magic. We are not able to measure it, but it's there. And the most interesting part in this is that most of the people, for example, in business model, just share this experience. They can see it, they can feel it, they can work with it, but no one is really able to, as already said, to measure it. And I'd like to take this metaphor to ask you the first question. I think that to open a different perspective on things, putting things out of their conventional context, as I already mentioned, we can use questions. And one of these essential and central questions for me is the what if question. What if we are, yes, and now in conjunction with our topic, what if we are able to learn more from nature in business contexts? And it's not from this inner place of an angry activist and wounded warrior, but it's more a question, okay, there are obviously core principles, universal principles of life. And what if we are trying to combine that with business models? And coming back to this magic, to this specific source, specific energy, I'd like to ask you, is there the moment, probably the very first moment in your life, kind of a magic, probably kind of an epiphany, that you've consciously realized, wow, what if I just consider nature from a totally different perspective? Is there one of these moments in your life?
Yeah. I think that there's quite a few kind of milestone moments that also brought me on this path of exploring regeneration and how we can learn from living systems and how we design societies and organizations and how we learn to lead based on the principles of living systems and life in general. But what really kind of, what is a big milestone moment for me that I always reflect back on is when I, for a short period of time, lived in the Ecuadorian part of the Amazon forest. Part of my kind of job on a day-to-day basis was to walk around with indigenous shamans, because it was part of an environmental organization that were buying up pieces of land that had been exploited and depleted by oil companies to kind of restore and regenerate that land. So that was one part of what we did. Another part was to go around for days exploring the parts of the forest that this organization owned to make sure that snipers did not build huts and oil companies were not moving into those territories. So I was lucky to go with these indigenous leaders and kind of forest protectors on these daily walks. And up until then, I mean, nature had always been important for me. I was very much a kind of nature child, but I hadn't been taught anything kind of significant about living systems and how they function and how nature kind of create conditions conducive for life. That had not been part of my upbringing. But kind of learning directly from them about the interconnectedness of life and how to see everything alive as brothers and sisters, and that your role in the greater tapestry of life is to be a protector of this web of life and to create conditions conducive for life and for generations to follow, and that your role is to be a good ancestor. And that's part of the indigenous worldview that to me was completely new when I was 19, 20 years old. And I was so fascinated by that worldview and what I was taught by these indigenous leaders and forest protectors. And I learned a lot from them, but that kind of, to see yourself as a great ancestor, to see yourself as a guardian and protector of life, to see yourself as part of a greater interconnected web of life, and the spiders are equally as important as the banana tree and you and the stream and the sun, and everything is part of this dynamic interwoven whole system. To learn about the wholeness of life was really significant. And it was something that has been a thread in me since then. This is now 25 years ago. But then I moved back to Europe and studied business and was very much trained in a rigid mechanistic worldview. But I always had that kind of inner disruptor. I wonder how life would do things differently. And this is definitely not how these kind of forest protectors, these indigenous leaders, they were not seeing the world the same way as the professors that was teaching me at business school. So it's been something that has kind of been an undercurrent in my life since then. So that is the kind of moment that I thought of immediately when you asked me that question.
What I was wondering is, okay, you obviously realized, and I think that's very common in this context, okay, I have this kind of insight in a different context, and then just coming back to my conventional context, as you already said, whatsoever business world, and isn't it a feeling of tension, of friction, of, okay, what shall I do with that? Or how can I understand that? Because I have this deep understanding of the principles of life in nature. And I can touch it and can see it, obviously. And then I go back to another kind of world and try to, or just realize that it's totally different. That is obviously totally disconnected from this idea of what I would call the evolutionary principles of life or the idea of life. Yeah. How was it for that? Or what's this kind of friction? Do you feel that or do you share it with me probably?
So I was raised by parents that were very kind of, they were activists on the left wing and was kind of raised to see corporations as the evil machine in many ways. So that was part of shaping me and probably also part of why I had this dedication of wanting to contribute and wanted to kind of help take our societies in another direction. But I was curious. I really wanted to understand that worldview of the corporation, the business mentality, the business mind. I wanted to understand that. So therefore, I deliberately wanted to study business. But it was always with that intention. I wouldn't say that I had an inner kind of tension around it, but it was because it was always with that intention of, I want to understand this logic. I want to understand this logic and immerse myself in that logic. So I don't see myself as either better than that, something not part of that, because we are all immersed in many ways in that logic because it's so dominating in our Western societies. So I wanted to deeply understand that, to understand how can I start to shift things in another direction that is not completely kind of stripped away from that logic, but sort of like a Trojan horse trying to change things from the inside out by understanding the logic that you're trying to change, instead of just being an angry activist that is yelling at corporation that they need to change and that they are the evil force in the world. How can we instead kind of soften, understand with compassion that logic that has been kind of deeply embedded in them for decades? And if we include the kind of scientific revolution and how that has also been influenced by a kind of, by the story of separation and a rigid mechanistic worldview, then how can we meet that logic we are trying to change and inspire with compassion? So that has kind of driven me from a very early age. And in many ways, I wrote my master thesis on, I interviewed global CEOs and I interviewed them on what are the main barriers when implementing low carbon business strategy. That was the term used almost 20 years ago, a low carbon business strategy. To understand what are their challenges and why are we not seeing things move at the speed required. And then I have spent 20 years building different global organizations, helping to transition our societies to sustainability. And in many ways, for the first 10 years, I was solely dedicated on changing global policy, scaling technology and great innovations, improving financial mechanisms, and all of the more kind of traditional tools. But for me, things started to change in my kind of work and my contribution around 12 years, where I really kind of started to weave back in this indigenous worldview and reconnect dots back to what I had been taught when living in the Amazon. Because I guess you could say there had been this kind of, I don't know if I want to call it attention, but that kind of undercurrent in my life that I could not forget. I kept kind of increasing my curiosity around, what, instead of seeing the world of business and our dominating world logic, instead of seeing that as something separate, how about we started to see that as something that the indigenous worldview could actually soften, influence, and contribute to positively and build those bridges? I don't know if that makes sense. So instead of seeing it as two different things, how would the dominating world logic, how would that look like if it was influenced by an indigenous worldviews? And how can we build the bridges so that an indigenous approach to doing business wouldn't be something so far-fetched that the traditional executive would not be able to connect and relate? And that started my trajectory towards regenerative leadership, regenerative business. How would a living systems approach to life inspire business models, organizational design, leadership, society design, how would that then look like?
Well, before we dig into this topic, because I really think that's a crucial point, I'd like to share with you an experience from myself. You know, if I think back on my journey, the regenerative leadership journey, it was 2 years ago that I'm part of the cohort in 2023. That was one thing that really, really resonated with me and stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And it was a moment, probably my kind of magic moment in our journey. And you've talked about, okay, yeah, probably exactly what you've already talked about, is, okay, there was a time you realized that it makes a difference if you stop blaming and finger pointing.
Yeah.
And stepping into a kind of a harder, braver space of truly addressing what's happening. And it was a kind of a frustration. And the moment you've talked about was that you understand it's a huge difference if you act from an inner place or an angry activist or wounded warrior.
Yes.
Really, according to Otto Sharma, the success of the intervention depends on the inner condition of the intervener. You probably know it. And that really resonates with me. And I understand. Yes. And for me, it was a very special moment because it dealt with this inner friction or tension that I felt. Okay, how can I facilitate a process where for me, it's so obvious that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with the principles of nature or the wisdom of nature. But on the other hand, there's a world outside there. There's a world, and I'm not able to transmit that. I'm not able to be a space holder for this friction and being constantly conscious. How can I manage a kind of a connectivity that people just listen and start talking about the principles of what we've already talked about, regenerative leadership. And yeah, as I already said, that was for me a kind of a special magic moment in my personal journey. But just let me try to come back to what you've talking about, that, okay, there are these core principles, and just in case that some of the listeners and the audience is not so deeply familiar with the topic of regenerative leadership, what do you think are the one, two, or three first principles that are really crucial for them to understand, a kind of a invitation to think about if they probably be part of a conventional business model? What do you think are the first two or three topics that we just try to address or to bring into the room?
Yeah, so if you have been trained for many, many, many years to run an organization the traditional way, it can feel so far-fetched to explore how would nature do this. And for me, it's important that it's not directly how would nature design businesses, but it's understanding the logic of living systems. So living systems continuously create conditions conducive for life. So for example, living systems are designed away. So when an apple falls to the ground in the autumn, that's not waste that will pollute the soil. It's the opposite. It offers rich nutrients, abundance for billions of microbes. And it enriches the topsoil, the very skin of our planet that needs a really well-nourished layer of topsoil to be as healthy as possible, to be able to absorb heavy rainwater and to be able to create the conditions for new seeds to blossom when spring comes. So that principle, the first principle of understanding living systems. If we then translate that into organizations, well, when we look around in organizations, we see a lot of depletion. We see a lot of deserts psychologically, mentally. There's a lot of burnout. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of ways where organizations do not create conditions conducive for life for their employees. If we are translating again and using a living systems language, each employee is very much cells in the organism. Some departments are the heart, some are the lungs, some are the kind of, and they are all cells in the organism. And if you have an organization where there's a lot of toxicity, a lot of kind of gossiping, and a lot of really kind of brutal ways of navigating and communicating, and if there is a lot of stress, a lot of burnout, that means that that organism, because regardless of how much we want to force the machine mentality to our organizations, everything that is alive is still a living system. A living system is identified by something that is continuously evolving and shaping and shifting. And an organization consists of these cells, the employees, and they are constantly shifting. And if the cells in the organism, if the majority of those, or just a third or 20%, are super unhealthy, that has an impact on the wholeness, on performance, efficiency, and all those terms that the machine finds wonderful and loves to kind of measure in terms of KPI. It dramatically affects the KPIs if most of the cells in that organism are unhealthy, toxic, sick, burned out. So that's on the inner dimensions that we can see, okay, how can we create conditions conducive for health, life, vitality here? And then there's the outer dimension. Do our organization as an entity, do we create conditions conducive for life in our surroundings? Are we using a very kind of depleting, toxic production system, transportation system, the way we sell our services? Do they leave a toxic or a life-affirming footprint? So that's a mentality that leaders of the 21st century need to get really comfortable with. How do we create conditions conducive for life in our external environment, our outer ecosystems, and our inner ecosystems? So that's kind of the first step in terms of seeing yourself as a regenerative leader. Start to practice that way. We call it the ecosystem facilitator's worldview, right? That you are not a director, a controller that is assessing how far you're performing in terms of KPIs. You are a gardener, a cultivator of life force energy in your living system, in your organizations, your teams, departments, whatever it may be. You are a space holder of that. You're not a controller of that. So how do you tap into the capacity, inner capacity, of being a space holder? Holding space for emergence is another key term for the regenerative leader, to understand that you don't rigidly control or force the machine in a certain direction. You are part of a greater interconnected web of life and a complexity landscape that is increasing day by day in the 21st century. So really, none of us can predict what will happen in a couple of months, or let alone years from now. So how do we practice our capacity to hold space for emergence by tuning in to a wiser inner ingenuity in ourselves, but also in our teams and in our organizations? And for us to do that, we need to open up and expand our capacities to not just run and control with our minds, but with our hearts, our souls, and this kind of whole system approach to our wisdom and ingenuity, that we are more than a rational, logical intelligence. We have whole system body intelligence. And as space holders, we need to open up to that magical field that you were referring to. And that's where the magic for me comes in. When we learn to surrender, let go of control, and navigate wisely, by sensing and responding, something we can only do if we trust and listen deeply to our external, internal landscapes. So we listen deeply to our employees, to the world around us, What is happening? Where do we need to kind of navigate? And where do we need to massage? What's a word you use as well?
This living system.
Which direction do we need to take this living system if we want to be based on
wise?
There's a really a lot of noise. I don't know if you hear that. When you're moving things around, there's a lot of noise.
Sorry for that. I'm just obviously shuffling with paper. So sorry to the listeners. And I hope that we can cope that in the post-production. But anyway, coming back to your thoughts, in my perception, you were talking about what I would describe as mind shift. And in this conjunction, I think that it could be crucial to understand that we are more part of a process. And processes in complex systems, you described it as living systems, have resistances. For me, it's what I'd like to share with you is, for me, if we are part of a process in a complex system context, then it's more about understanding that we are probably not able to force people to do something. So for me, it's more the question of how can I or we invite people constantly to shift their minds, to change their perspective on this specific system. And coming from the systems thinking, I think it's we have to understand, or it's crucial to understand, that complex systems are not working in a cause and effect logic, but more in a more based on correlation. So for me, it's almost a very interesting question, or for me personally, it's always a question: how can I invite people constantly to shift their minds? And that's one thing. And on the other side, I think that it could be interesting to find one or two little entry points. For me, it's more kind of portals. Where can I just invite the entire system just to shift the mind on a system level? And I try to combine that with a metaphor that comes into my mind. Well, it's a metaphor back from the days. I don't know if you can imagine that, but I totally convinced that you can imagine that. Back in the days, there are old lumber workers, and these old lumber workers have to transport the logs downriver. And as you can imagine, sometimes the flow would completely stop because the logs would get jammed and the whole system would come to a standstill. And here's what it gets interesting. There were key log experts, people whose only job was to find the one single log tree that was causing the jam, because they know or they understand that if they would move it, the entire system would start flowing again. So what I'm trying to describe with this metaphor is, if we just consider the regenerative leadership approach as, yeah, from the systems thinking angle, what do you think? Isn't it crucial to find one or two of these key logs in organizations, or isn't it interesting to talk about these key logs? Because I think that these key logs are able to be a kind of a tipping point that is that jams the flow in our systems, and that is probably able to create these ripple effects or a kind of a momentum in organizations that invite people thinking about their context from a different angle, that they shift their mind and ask probably different questions.
That's, I mean, the approach that you are addressing, great metaphor, is very much that approach of the ecosystem facilitator, the regenerative leader who is sensing where is there stagnated energy, friction, potential that I need to address. And I and others call it kind of, where are the key nodal points, acupuncture points that we need to massage? Because when we start to massage those, the ripples that they will generate is far more bigger and have greater impact than if we would do kind of full kind of systemic change. The approach of the permaculture gardener that the regenerative leader is also drawing inspiration from is very much to kind of observe, be still, and sense, where do I, with the littlest impact, the minimal impact, the minimal intervention have the greatest impact? And that's very much what you are speaking to as well. And that importance of kind of daring to stop in our tracks. And it depends, because there's never a one-size-fit-all or a kind of a recipe for regenerative interventions, but something that can seem very small and insignificant that I see again and again have the greatest impact is the design of how we come together. And let me go deeper into that. So the design of how we come together, how we in corporations and organizations host meetings, it's always very kind of similar. We gather either virtually or physically. Physically, we gather around a table. There's an agenda. Maybe there's a key facilitator. And then we kind of boom, 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 go to the agenda. Often, it's the very kind of dominating alpha people that takes up most of the space in that room. And the regenerative leader understands that that's not how we access the deepest wisdom of this, of the capacity that we are collectively holding. So how do I shift the energetics in how we come together? Because often people are then spending an hour in that meeting. There's a lot of kind of noise, and we don't really go to the essence, because there's also a lot of kind of psychological dynamics happening. People that want to, that have this kind of subtle subconscious desire of wanting to impress other people and wanting to have the solution. There's a lot of that going on in many meetings. How can I sound as smart and articulate as possible? So there's a lot of kind of below the surface. There's so much competition. There's so much power over. There's so much kind of, egos clashing that is just so soul depriving and soul sapping and energy demanding, which means that many of us leave completely depleted after meetings, especially if we've had a day with many meetings. So the regenerative way of bringing people together is one where we do what you did before you press record. How can we kind of take a deep breath together? So what you did, so to the listener, we just had a few minutes of silence together so we could kind of synchronize in a way. How can we do that in our meetings, both virtually, you and I having this conversation, I'm in Denmark, you're in Germany. How can we do this both virtually when we're having a meeting, but also physically? And the reason that people are not doing this to a greater extent is because there's a vulnerability kind of inner clash that you need to get really comfortable with. For many, it can be, even though it's such a small thing, it can be such a big thing, such a challenging thing to suggest. How about we design our meetings differently? So from now on, we start our meetings with a minute or two of silence, just so our brainwaves can come down, our nervous systems can feel more grounded. And we know from science that when we kind of shift brainwaves and go from high beta just to beta, it doesn't have to be kind of delta, theta meditation brainwaves. but just taking our brainwaves down from high beta. High beta is the kind of very high red alert stage. It's the brainwave that means that we, as a very fragile species, is still around because we have this capacity to enter kind of incredibly problem-solving skills. When we get tunnel vision, we filter out everything else and we tune in on just that problem. And that's an amazing capacity that we have as Homo sapiens. The challenge is that it's an incredibly depleting brainwave to be in. It's only designed physiologically, neurologically for us to be in for very, very short seconds, very briefly, and then go into beta or the other brainwaves that we tap into in meditation and sleep. But today, the majority of employees and executives spend the majority of their day in high beta. So it completely depletes us and it saps us from light force energy. It also means that when we are in high beta, we can't access compassion, empathy, and it's also impossible for us to think in interconnected systems. Because when we are in high beta, we tune in, we get tunnel vision, we only focus on one thing at a time. So if our meetings could just kind of ground us, so we are not acting from that kind of fight or flight mode, but rather we are calm, we have synchronized, we are in a better kind of headspace, literally. That is one thing. Another thing is, what can we do in our meetings and in our workspaces to feel better?
I just want to add something. Sorry for interrupting you, but that's why I'm really convinced why it could make sense, not just talking about regenerative with as a one topic phenomena, but open the perspective. And what you're talking about is probably a crucial point in this mindfulness movement. And what my experience is in this case is, if you start inviting people thinking about their decision making process, it could be a very crucial point to address that the quality of decision is the foundation of the success of any business model. You can see that. If the quality of a decision is on a high level, you can't prevent having a successful business model. And if you understand that the quality of a decision is deeply related to your inner state, means that if you are totally under stress, if you have chronic stress diseases whatsoever, you are not able to make a healthy or a high level decision. You are always on a fight flight mode. You always try to avoid something. You always try to protect something. You always try to fix something. And then the room of decision is very narrow. And that's, for me, totally agree with you that this is probably one of these key locks. If people start understanding that, and it's not an intellectual understand, because you probably know that we understand so many things intellectually. The question is, how can we embody that? How can we help people that it's like diving a little bit deeper into the system, that they really live it from the cellular level of their body, so to say. And what I'm trying to add just is, I really try to emphasize that and underline that for me, is finding key locks in an organization. It's not just about, okay, we are talking about sustainability, how can we have a different view on that? It's more finding situations on a daily basis where people understand, if I shift that, and it could be a very, very small step, then it has, as you already said, that's according to the system thinking approach, little input, very huge output. And no one knows what's the little input, because no one is really able to have this cause and effect phenomena in a complex system, because no one is really able to measure that. But we can observe that. Yeah. So just to add that, and just to please continue with your probably second point. I hope you don't lose the track or the thought that you have already in your mind.
Exactly. I mean, the inner informs the outer. And if we are in a constantly fight or flight, or from a nervous system point of view, if we are constantly kind of in the red zone, it's physiologically impossible for us to make healthy decisions. And my second point was that living systems, part of the kind of the principles of living systems is that living systems thrive thanks to interconnected relationships. And again, that can bring us back into the meeting. If we have meetings that have this kind of fight or flight dominating energy, where we are competing for airtime, competing for who has the best decision and who wins the argument, it's really, really damaging to the fact of the inner relationships in our organizations. And I think many people can relate to that. It's incredibly depleting to go to work somewhere where there is so much psychological energy spent on kind of psychological politics and power over dynamics and all of that. So facilitating meetings in a regenerative way not only create conditions conducive for life, it also strengthens the carrying capacity of that living systems, because we know that we need to have really strong interconnected relationships. And just to get back to a regenerative meeting is not just to start with a grounding. It's also to use one of the oldest technologies in the world, an indigenous technology, which is way of counsel, circle practice. So how about we dare to move away from sitting around a table, and maybe we put the chairs in a circle, and maybe we have a talking stick. It doesn't have to be fancy. It can just be a pen. And what we do now in this meeting is, instead of interrupting each other and not listening, we practice deep listening. So we practice deep listening to ourselves and everyone in the meeting room. So after we have grounded ourselves, we pass the talking stick around in a circle. And another principle of living system is to constantly ensure that we vent and air, that there needs to be a constant flow of energy and matter. So if there's an energetic of stress, competition, colleague of mine is so annoying, it's really, really difficult for us to access the wise decisions that you were also speaking to. So that psychological energy needs to be aired. So many regenerative leaders, they work with actively creating an environment and a culture where we speak our truth and where we air those indifferences and where we allow ourselves to sit with that tension. Because often, when we dare to address that tension instead of pretending it's not there, what we do is that we are actually often taking things to a higher evolutionary level. If we address that in a way where we are tapping into a healthy way of holding space for that tension. So that would be my recommendation, which is a fairly easy yet super challenging way to get started working more regeneratively. How do we dare hold space for meetings so that we listen deeply to ourselves, to our inner deeper ingenuity, but we also listen deeply to everyone in the space so that we lower the frequency in a healthy way, in a more grounded way, so we all feel kind of safe and free and liberated to access deeper layers of our inner wisdom. And while we are creating an environment where we can do that with each other, we are strengthening and deepening the relationships between us. And we know that we can carry much more tension and friction when we have these strong, nurtured relationships. So yes, regeneration is not yet another management philosophy or another thing to implement and hire consultants. For me, a regenerative approach is tapping into so much of the good that we already have. I never work as a consultant for companies where I come in and tell them what to do. What I prefer to do is to work with keystone species in the organizations, people that have an impact, and help to train them, help to train a corpse of people from within that can hold this. So it's not something top down that gets implemented, because there's so much fatigue around new management strategies. We need to hold space for the goodness, for the regenerative capacities that are already there. And as you say, I mean, the regenerative field borrows wisdom from indigenous wisdom, theory U, integral frameworks, evolutionary frameworks, the Thiel framework, etc. We can build on all of that, and we can assess in the company, where are they doing great things already? Mindfulness, you were mentioning as an example. For me, mindfulness is just not going to cut it alone. There are many of these things that are not going to cut it alone. So therefore, we need to see them as kind of helpful enablers of starting to shift the whole organization in a healthy regenerative direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally resonates with me. And I'd just like to add something, as you already said, that, yeah, I truly believe that, as I already said, mindfulness could be one of these keystones in my language, is one of these key locks where we can just what we can use as a very small, sometimes very small entry point into a discussion. Not just, as I already said, not just to fix it with one event and wow, one keynote, and everyone is just standing up and say, "Oh, I got it now," and we change everything. But be patient is and be able to hold the space.
Yes.
While I have an inner state that wants more,
yeah,
but to accept that nothing more is possible at the moment, and I just have to be aware of my personal inner state, what is my need, what is my wish, what is my thing in this conjunction, and what is able to connect in this organization or maybe in this team.
Yeah.
But
and understand cyclical processes, which is another capacity of the regenerative leader. Right now, you and I are talking to each other at the kind of depth of winter. It's January. And therefore, it doesn't make sense for you to bring me out into your garden and yell at me for there not being apples on the tree right now. It simply does. I mean, there's no point. Nature works in cyclical processes, and we as Homo sapiens are cyclical beings on a cyclical planet. So to force us to be in constant spring and summer goes out against our human nature. And it's the same for work processes. And I'm not saying that we should just take 5 months off during the winter phase. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. But it's just an important thing to have at the back of our mind that we need to be patient. Because the more that we nurture soil and the more that we accept the stillness of the winter, the more fertile our garden and abundant our garden will be when spring and summer come.
Let's take this. We were talking about this seasoning approach. And for me, it's one of the core principles of regenerative leadership. Well, let's take this, or I invite you to take this, to cut it a little bit into digestible pieces. What is about wintering? It's about spring, summer, and autumn. And what could it be, or which potential is inside of that in conjunction with a business model or with organization, with economy? Let's take that, please.
We've already talked about stress levels and burnout levels. And Gallup does this kind of global health and wellness report every second year. And it's the results of that is very, very dire and depressing, because we get more and more depressed, more and more suicides, more and more stress and burnout and mental illnesses. We need to take that. We need to address that. And we have a responsibility as well as corporations. Also, it's incredibly costly for an organization to have many people burn out. Incredibly costly. So that's something we as business leaders need to address. And one way of doing that is to surrender to a cyclical process. So we cannot continuously extract and extract and extract from our outer ecosystems or our inner ecosystems, because what that will end up doing is that will take us directly to collapse. So from an outer perspective, we know we have crossed 6 to 7 out of 9 planetary boundaries that we cannot cross if we want to avoid collapse. I don't want to take up too much time talking about the condition of our outer ecosystems, but it's pretty clear. I mean, we are in the 6th mass extinction. It's pretty dire. But let's go back to our inner ecosystems and the state that they are in, because we have extracted and extracted and extracted. And there is this mentality. Many have kind of internalized capitalism to an extent where we feel guilty for taking a break. And we need to disrupt that, because we cannot continuously extract on our inner ecosystems, because we will collapse. So we need to replenish, restore, revitalize our inner ecosystems on a daily basis. So what I do, for example, I consciously create my days around a cyclical approach. So I know I cannot be in constant spring and summer, perform, execute, be in meetings, kind of be very visionary. That will not happen unless I give myself pauses and breaks, because it's in the pause that we integrate everything we've just been through in the spring and summer cycle. We absorb it, we integrate it, we filter it, we kind of go into deeper wisdom levels within. And if we take that out, if we take out the preserving, harvesting energy of autumn, or the replenishing, restoring, revitalizing energy of winter, because we view it as something that doesn't have significance, because right now when you and I look outside, it looks like almost nature is dead. It looks like nature is dead because nothing is happening. It's just still. But this is actually the most potent months in a cyclical year, because this is now where the roots are drawing up all the juice that they need. It's when the buds are kind of making themselves ready. So when spring comes very soon here in the Northern Hemisphere, the abundance and the flourishing and the growth will be so significant, because the tree respected its need for a deep stillness winter phase. And it's the same for us humans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know many companies that have now started to integrate a cyclical process, because the listener may think, again, well, it doesn't make sense that I take kind of, I can't go into hibernation mode over winter. It's not possible with my kind of lifestyle and the corporation that I'm running, etc. That may be true, but what you can do is do what I try to do and incorporate a seasonal approach to your work day, to your whole day. So if you've been very productive, been to a lot of meetings, what can you do to ground yourself? And instead of just kind of rushing to the next, carve out just 15 minutes of reflection after a meeting. What did I learn? What triggered me? What do I need to kind of harvest? And can I just carve out 5 up to 15 minutes where I'm just still with myself? Practice meditation. Go for a walk. We know that when we spend time in nature, our memory improves, our creative problem-solving capacity increased by 50%. And that's because nature is our natural habitat. So how can we start to integrate and be self-empowered to start to live wiser lives? And I believe we can integrate that into our work life by doing what we just talked about in terms of a minute of silence before meetings. But also, I mean, bring the power back to yourself. What can you do to book spaces and slots in your calendar, work calendar, for winter spaces, for the reflective, integrative spaces of renewal?
Well, if I had to summarize our conversation, and I do have the advantage that it's not the first time that, not directly, but I'm just part of a room where we are just try to talk about that and try to investigate together what can we do, what's this little entry points, this portals in organizations, just to get a little grip on that. And just to try as I already said, just to enable or to empowering people in organizations that it's not just a high level philosophical keynote who is really, because you probably know that it's regenerative leadership is a very nice topic for keynotes. Please, Laura, come 20 minutes talking about regenerative. And everyone said, okay, yeah, very nice. And then just go back to the old kind of conventional way of working. So I just try to invite you, if we are able to do that, it's just about sharing our thoughts, or maybe we have an idea together, probably the biggest or the hardest nut. So just keep in mind, there are people right now listen to us and said, okay, yeah, I know that. And yes, I know. Yes, yes, yes. Just constantly they say in their heads, they say, yes, I really want that. But then they just try to really relate that or try to transfer that into their daily business, And they are sitting right here, and it's kind of frustrating because they say, okay, I know that, but my daily business constraints of figures versus consciousness. So it's okay. Yeah, it's reporting first and impact second. And they are constantly asking me, okay, competing frameworks, data collection to give some reasons why we have to do that. The greenwashing risk, it's probably in the room. And when we discuss about that, are we able? It's just challenging. I know that. Are we able, just in 2 or 3 minutes, do we have a tip for them? Do we have a kind of a, we can strengthen them. We can say, okay, you are not alone. do that. Are we able to do that? I know that it's pretty challenging, but
yeah, I'm of course being asked that question quite a lot, because when you feel stuck in a system that is depleting you, and you hear ideas like the ones we have shared today, or pick them up elsewhere, and you feel this kind of soul pull. It's not just intellectually that it may make sense, but you also feel something. Yes, I want this. You feel this kind of inner pull. And then you look back at your kind of reality, and it's so hard to build the bridge between what you and I have talked about for an hour and your daily reality. So I want to acknowledge that. And I want to stress that Rome wasn't built in a day. But I also want to encourage people to start carving out what would a more life-affirming daily life be like for them, and how can they start to take power over what they actually do have power over, and how do they start to show up in a way that they can be proud of, regardless of what their circumstance is right now and the paycheck that they need to make and all of that. Because we are all still trapped in this system. But I lend a lot of hope from the living systems metaphor that you will have heard me share many times before, that when a butterfly goes through its metamorphosis, it starts being a caterpillar. And a caterpillar is incredibly kind of greedy and hungry, and all it does is eating, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it kind of reaches its stage where things, it starts to kind of tremble and shake, and we can detect kind of fear hormones in the caterpillar. So it's afraid. It's afraid of what is happening with me and what is going on here. And then it goes through the chrysalis phase, which is this kind of liminal landscape of this foggy, gooey state of metamorphosis. And what happens in that darkness, in this confusing inner darkness, is that imaginal cells starts to awake that can only be activated in the darkness of the chrysalis phase. And the imaginal cells are cells that looks like caterpillar cells, but they hold the higher evolutionary potential, biologically speaking, of that species. They start to awake one by one, and they form imaginal groupings, and they join together. And these imaginal groupings then start to reach a threshold. And when that threshold is reached, we see the butterfly emerging. And I love to use that metaphor in combination with results and scientific studies from social economics, where we know when does a threshold start to happen in living systems, in societies. And many studies have carried out, when does something start to be an idea to a new way of being and really be a movement? And we know that from different studies, and we have mentioned those in our book for those that are curious, it's around 11 to 13% that needs to be starting to doing things in a new way for the threshold to be reached, for this to be the new norm. And for me, it's something that I can relate to. So if you are part of a 100 employee organization, let's just use that as an example, I can relate to having 10 colleagues that start to practice new ways of working together, new ways of being together, which can be tapping into the individual courage. Courage comes from the Latin word core, which means speak your truth through your heart. How can we all practice that more? Tap into your inner courage and facilitate, for example, meetings that we've already talked about in a different way that allow us to be whole humans. And maybe that starts to be the new norm. And maybe those other pockets of new life force energy that is needed for us to be able to create bigger and brighter waves of transformative energy. And I'm not just saying that because that would look nice and feel nice and is an idea that I have. I'm saying this because that's what I see happening again and again. Transformation right now in regenerative landscapes always starts with one brave employee that dares to speak the truth and transform things in a radical and impressive way fairly quickly, when we dare to speak to people, tapping into our heart energy. Because when we do that, we tap into other people's heart energy. And that's a much greater force to be reckoned with.
Mm. Well, nothing more to add, but just one thing.
Yeah.
So just a little announcement. If you are one of those brave starters who really could be a spark in an organization and have this kind of inner feeling of an in-between, mm-hmm. and you were talking about this kind of dark room where I think, okay, I'm just alone. I can tell you from my perspective, and probably Laura would join me, you are not alone. There is a community out there, and you can join this community. And I'm not sure, but just to give you the information, the release date of our episode will be next week on the 4th of February. But I'm not pretty sure, but the cohort for this year, Regenerative Leadership Journey, just closed a couple of days ago.
Yeah. So Stephen, you mentioned previously that you had this kind of epiphany moment during the journey, and the journey you were referring to is this kind of annual journey that I hold space for people mm-hmm. from, it's usually around 35 different nations, learning, diving deeper into regenerative leadership principles together for a whole year. We have decided to keep the kind of back door open. Officially, we have closed registration. But the first proper live session is taking place on February 5th. So if you're listening to this on February 4th and just want to dive in immediately, write to us directly and we can still sneak you in through the back door and you can join us. Otherwise, sign up for the waiting list and you'll get more information in November next year. There's something that I really want, and you're only welcome, of course. We still have a few more spots. But something that I really wanted to share in connection with what I just shared about transformation and imaginal selves. You are based, Stefan, in Germany. Maybe you have many German listeners. What I was just talking you through is what is actually happening as we speak right now in Mercedes-Benz. So Mercedes-Benz Vans had a very courageous employee, head of sales on the Scandinavian market, who had read my book, me and Giles' book, Regenerative Leadership, was fed up with what she felt was a very toxic culture. She wanted to quit her job. She was convinced by her immediate kind of closest manager to stay. She got a little budget to do a pilot around regenerative leadership for a year. And they measured, in terms of KPI, they measured performance level, energy level, stress levels based on that little Scandinavian pilot project. Impressive results. which has resulted in now, on a European basis, a few kind of regional chapters in US and Australia are now having these kind of hubs in Mercedes-Benz called the Ambassador Corps. So Ambassador Corps in all key regions of the Mercedes-Benz market are now being trained in regenerative leadership. And that has kind of, it has grown to an inner movement that they are referring to as something that is an unstoppable life force energy. And that has happened over only 2.5 years, that it has grown from one individual having the courage to say no more to this being an actual inner regenerative movement of that organization. So you are strong if you are listening to this. So dare to speak in to your inner courage and your radical honesty, and just know that this is possible.
Mm. Well, let me just add, but it's not a sales event here, but I just want to invite all the peoples. There are several people all over Germany, me too, and we have a kind of a little regenerative home circle from different business areas, from different companies and organizations. And I just want to mention that if someone is really interesting in being connected in this kind of topic, and the cohort for 2025 is obviously, or is, it's closed because you just need 2, 3, 4, 5 days after listening this episode, then please, it's no problem, contact me and I just can be a kind of a transmitter into this field. That's just...
So many German journey travelers of the regenerative leadership journey have created a really beautiful kind of regional community that is very powerful. And it's my understanding that you also gather physically, right?
Yeah, physically. And we have a kind of a monthly. And we just, but virtually, because we are sitting all over Germany and it's much more comfortable for us to have these exchange on a monthly base. And it's not that we just find the holy grail in every monthly. It's just about connecting. It's about exchange. It's about experiences. It's about sometimes one topic. Just talk about that and being connected. That's the intention of
I see the regenerators community as these kind of essential watering holes that we all need on our individual journeys. And so many of us are just sick of being a lonely wolf, and we need a wolf pack. We need community. We need each other to make this the new norm.
Mm. Wow. So, Laura, I really appreciate our conversation. Thank you so much. I'm really grateful for that. And yeah, nothing more to say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stefan. Thank you so much. I will go to my sick kids and take care of them, be a regenerative parent today. But thank you for inviting me on your podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Und das war Beyond KPI, der Podcast für Menschen, die es spannend finden, mehr darüber zu erfahren, was das Magische des Lebens ausmacht und das schon Faszinierende nicht zu Verstehende. Schön, dass du wieder eingeschaltet hast. Und bis zum nächsten Mal.